Hey there, welcome back to 7-Minute Books. I'm Sam, and today we're talking about this wild book by Kathleen McAuliffe called This Is Your Brain on Parasites. Sophie, I have to ask, did this book make you feel like you're not really in control of your own life?
Oh, absolutely. And hello, it's one of those books that kind of unsettles you in the best way. McAuliffe looks at how parasites, things like tiny flatworms and single-celled organisms, can literally manipulate the behavior of their hosts. And the crazy part is, some of them might be doing it to us.
Right? She opens with this example that just blew my mind, the Lancet fluke. It's a flatworm that needs to get from a snail into an ant and then into a cow or sheep. And to do that, it basically turns the ant into a zombie.
Yeah. The ant normally stays low and avoids heat, but when it's infected, it climbs to the top of a blade of grass at dusk and clamps down. It just waits there to be eaten by a grazing animal. The parasite has hijacked its brain.
And this isn't science fiction. This is happening right now in fields all over the world. McAuliffe uses this to introduce the concept of the extended phenotype, which Richard Dawkins came up with. The idea is that a gene's influence can reach outside the body. It can manipulate the environment, including other organisms' behavior, to help itself survive.
And parasites are masters of that. Their genes build bodies and behaviors that extend way beyond their own physical boundaries. So the fluke's genes are essentially making the ant do their bidding.
And she moves to something even closer to home, Toxoplasma gondii. This is a parasite that lives in cats, but it can infect pretty much any warm-blooded animal, including humans. And it does this terrifying thing to rodents.
Right.
Normally, rats and mice are genetically programmed to fear the smell of cat urine. But when they get infected with Toxoplasma, that fear flips into attraction. They become curious about the scent, which makes them way more likely to get eaten by a cat. The parasite completes its life cycle.
It literally rewires their brain to seek out their own predator. And here's the kicker. Millions of people carry Toxoplasma in their brains right now. It forms dormant cysts in neural tissue. And for most of us, it doesn't cause obvious illness. But McAuliffe presents research suggesting it might be subtly shaping our personalities.
Yeah, and that's where it gets really personal. Studies show that infected men tend to be more risk-taking and jealous, while infected women tend to be more warm-hearted, but also more anxious. The effects are small, but statistically significant. It makes you wonder, if a parasite can nudge your personality, how much of what you think of as your true self is actually your own?
Exactly. And some researchers have even linked Toxoplasma to schizophrenia. The evidence is correlational, but it's compelling enough that people are taking it seriously. McAuliffe also looks at how it might influence entire cultures. Countries with higher infection rates tend to have higher neuroticism.
Then she shifts to viruses, which are even more sophisticated manipulators. Rabies is a perfect example. It makes the host aggressive and prone to biting, which spreads the virus. At the same time, it causes hydrophobia, fear of water, so the animal doesn't drink and keeps its saliva concentrated with viral particles. Every symptom is a manipulation.
But not all viruses are bad. She introduces the concept of a virome, the community of viruses living in and on us. Many of them are actually essential. Bacteriophages help regulate our gut bacteria, and some viruses have been integrated into our own DNA over millions of years. They play roles in everything from placental development to memory formation.
So the line between self and non-self is really blurry. And that's a theme she returns to throughout the book. We're not discrete individuals, we're ecosystems.
Then she dives into the gut microbiome. This is the trillions of bacteria living in our intestines. And they communicate with our brain through the gut-brain axis. The vagus nerve carries signals both ways, so what's happening in your gut can affect your mood, stress levels, and even your behavior.
And there's this amazing study where they transferred gut bacteria from a bold mouse into a timid mouse, and the timid mouse became more adventurous. In humans, people with depression and anxiety tend to have different gut microbiomes. It's not clear which way the causation goes, but it's a two-way street.
Here's the part that really got me, the idea that gut microbes might be manipulating our food cravings. Different bacteria thrive on different foods, some like sugar, some like fat, and some like fiber. If a particular species wants to proliferate, it might send signals to your brain to make you crave what it needs. So when you reach for that chocolate cake, is it really you wanting it, or is it your bacteria?
That's deeply unsettling. And then she goes into the hygiene hypothesis, the idea that our modern obsession with cleanliness may be causing a rise in autoimmune diseases and allergies. By eliminating many of the microbes our immune systems evolved to deal with, we leave ourselves understimulated and prone to overreaction.
She also talks about how our immune system might influence mate selection. Women are often attracted to the scent of men whose immune genes are different from their own, because that produces more robust offspring. And this preference might be mediated by the microbes living on our skin.
And there's a whole chapter on how our disgust response, which evolved to help us avoid sick people, might shape our social and political attitudes. People who are more sensitive to disgust tend to be more conservative and more xenophobic. It's not that parasites determine our politics, but our evolved responses to disease can influence our worldview in ways we don't realize.
She even touches on the controversial idea that parasites in tropical regions might contribute to lower average IQ scores because infections divert energy from brain development. She handles it really carefully, acknowledging all the confounding factors.
The central theme throughout is the illusion of autonomy. We think we're independent agents, but we're teeming with life that has its own agenda. That doesn't mean we're helpless puppets, but it does mean we need to expand our understanding of what it means to be a self.
And she ends by looking forward. If parasites can manipulate us, maybe we can learn to manipulate them back. Probiotics, prebiotics, and fecal transplants are already being used. Researchers are exploring engineered microbes to deliver drugs or influence brain function. The same mechanisms parasites evolved could be used therapeutically.
But she also warns about the ethical dangers. If we can manipulate the microbiome to improve health, we could also use it to control behavior. The same technology that cures depression could be used to create compliant citizens.
Honestly, the takeaway for me is just how porous our boundaries are. We're not discrete individuals. We're walking communities. The next time I feel a sudden craving or a flash of anxiety, I'm going to pause and wonder, is that me or is it something else?
And if you want to go deeper, the whole library is over on 7minutebooks.com/app. They've got over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language. And it starts at $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 for lifetime access.
So we'll see you in the next one.
Take care, everyone.